Welcome back to the Deep Dive. It is February 13th, 2026. You're going to want to mark the date. We have been sitting in the dark, refreshing feeds, dealing with, you know, blurry leaks and speculation for what feels like forever.
It's been a long week.
But the silence from Kyoto has finally broken. And they aren't just announcing a console. They're calling it the Renaissance.
It's a heavy word, isn't it? Renaissance. It implies a rebirth, a whole new way of thinking.
It does.
And looking at the stack of documents we have here, the architect notes, the strategic briefs, it seems like they're taking that definition very, very literally.
It's definitely bold. Usually you get a press release and like a quick video. This feels more like a manifesto.
It does.
We have a lot to get through. Hardware specs that actually surprised me, a new philosophy on controls, and of course, the Golden List.
The Golden List is the big headline grabber.
14 titles.
Yeah.
Dropping this month.
Yeah.
Simultaneous release for the original Switch and what we're officially calling the Switch 2. I mean, 14 games at launch? That is aggressive.
It's extremely aggressive, but it's also, I think, a bit defensive.
Also,
if you look at the strategic analysis layer in our source material, there's this clear anxiety about the transition. They know they can't just rely on brand loyalty. They have to flood the zone.
Right. Bury the memory of the Wii U's software drought.
Exactly. But what's fascinating is the type of games. It's not just sequels. It's a real pivot in philosophy.
Okay. Let's get into that philosophy because the documents keep using this one phrase.
All right.
Pure creativity over pure graphics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have to be the cynic here for a second. Doesn't that sound a lot like we couldn't match the PS6 on power, so we're calling it an artistic choice?
Well, it's easy to read it that way, and, you know, historically that's been Nintendo's playbook.
It has.
But if you dig into the architect notes, this isn't about ignoring technology. It's about diverging from the current arms race.
Okay.
Sony and Microsoft are fighting this war of attrition over photorealism, ray tracing every reflection, simulating every pore. It requires immense power for diminishing returns.
You hit that uncanny valley problem.
Precisely. And Nintendo's thesis here is that players are fatigued by that. They're betting that in 2026, the market value of just better graphics has peaked.
So they're using the tech to make games play differently, not just look better.
That's the idea. They're using their hardware budget to fuel mechanical creativity.
Okay, so if the strategy is gameplay first, let's talk about the engine they built to drive it. Because despite all the creativity talk, the specs on this thing are not a joke.
No, they're not.
We have a teardown of the custom NVIDIA chip.
We do, and this is where the science part of the Renaissance comes in. This custom chip is doing some serious heavy lifting. But the real story isn't the raw clock speed, it's the resolution strategy.
The hybrid model is back.
It is, but the gap has widened. In handheld mode, you're getting a locked 1080p.
Which, on a 7 or 8 inch screen, is perfect. Anything more is just wasting battery.
1080p native on a handheld is going to be crisp, but the dock. That's where things get interesting. The analysis confirms 4K output.
Now, is that real 4K? Or is this some kind of checkerboarding magic? Because pushing 4K from a mobile chip seems, well, optimistic.
It's almost certainly a custom version of DLSS AI upscaling. The chip renders the game at a lower resolution to keep the frame rate high, and then the AI reconstructs it to 4K. It's the only way to get that fidelity without melting the plastic casing.
And speaking of that 4K signal, there was a very specific note in the supply chain data about the cable. It felt a bit like a warning label.
It is a warning label. To get that high bandwidth 4K signal, especially with HDR, you cannot use your old HDMI cable.
Oh, wow.
The dock ships with an HDMI 2.1 cable for a reason.
I feel like a lot of people are going to miss that. They'll just plug the new box into the old wires behind the TV.
And that would be a mistake. HDMI 2.0 just doesn't have the pipeline for it. If you use the old cable, the system will probably just throttle you back down to 1440p or 1080p.
So you need the new pipe to get the full Renaissance experience.
You do.
Okay, let's talk about the guts, though. The thing that actually excited me most wasn't the resolution, it was the RAM. We're jumping from 4GB LPDDR4 to 12GB of LPDDR5.
This is the single most important spec in the entire document.
Okay, play devil's advocate for me. My laptop has 32GB. The PS5 had 16GB years ago. Is 12GB really a revolution in 2026?
In a unified memory architecture on a handheld, absolutely, yes.
Okay.
You have to understand the bottleneck of the original Switch. 4GB was suffocating. Developers spent half their time just trying to cram assets into memory. It's why you saw so much pop-in.
The workbench was too small.
It was tiny. It was like trying to build a Lego castle on an airline tray table.
Right.
12 GB of LPDDR5 is like upgrading to a massive industrial drafting table. It means textures load instantly. It means open worlds don't need those fake elevator rides to hide loading screens.
So when they talk about creativity over graphics, this is what enables it.
Exactly. Complex physics, smarter AI that all lives in RAM. This jumps just it removes the handcuffs from the developers.
But there's always a cost to this much power, right? You cram a high-end chip and all that RAM into a little box, things get hot.
The thermal management section of the notes was extensive.
It sounds like they had a nightmare keeping this thing cool and small.
It's the eternal engineering trade-off. The notes mention a new cooling solution, probably a vapor chamber. But, and this is key, look at the battery life discussion.
It's not a big jump, is it?
No, it's not significantly longer than the OLED model. They likely had to sacrifice battery density just to make room for air channels to cool the thing.
So the Renaissance is powerful. But it's thirsty.
Very thirsty.
All right, let's move to the thing we actually hold. The Joy-Con 2. I have a love-hate relationship with the originals. Mostly hate when they drift.
I think we all do.
But the rails are gone.
The mechanical rails are history, yeah. The supply chain data confirms a move to magnetic snaps.
Describe that. Is that just for convenience?
It's about durability and feel. That rails system was a physical wear point. It got wobbly. Magnets don't wear out. It also just allows for a much cleaner look. It just clicks.
Okay, but there's a new button. And this one feels like a massive pivot for Nintendo. A dedicated chat key.
This is that cultural shift I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Nintendo has famously been this walled garden for online play. You had to use a smartphone app for voice chat. It was clunky and, frankly, embarrassing.
It was terrible.
Putting a dedicated microphone and chat button right on the hardware says, we are finally entering the modern era. They want social friction to be zero.
And the notes specify this isn't just for, you know, a Call of Duty port or something. They specifically mention the indie connection.
And that's the key. Imagine playing a co-op roguelike where you need instant communication. Mm. Nintendo is encouraging indie devs to big voice chat directly into the core gameplay.
Which brings us nicely to the software. Golden list. We have the hardware, the controller, what we're playing, 14 games.
A pretty diverse list.
Let's start with the one that seems to be the tech demo, Mario Tennis Fever.
Yeah, the tag next to this one is Next Gen Potentials.
A tennis game? Really?
Think about it. Tennis is fast. It requires high frame rates, precise physics. If you want to show your new console has zero input lag and can handle complex particle effects like dust kicking up, dynamic court wear tennis is actually the perfect stress test.
So it's the look how smooth this is game.
It's the butter smooth showcase.
Okay, then you have the GPU stress test. Resident Evil Requiem.
This one caught my eye because of one specific setting mentioned in the notes.
Which is?
High performance mode.
We're used to seeing that on PS5 or Xbox. Fidelity versus performance. But on a Nintendo console.
It's a first. It implies the developer is giving you the choice. You can have that glorious 4K upscaled image, or you can drop the resolution to lock in 60 frames per second.
For a survival horror game, that's huge.
It is. It shows Nintendo is trusting the player to understand their own preferences. It feels very PC. In a good way.
It does. Now, you mentioned the indie era. The list highlights Carmageddon Rogue Shift and Chromagun 2. Why those two?
Well, Carmageddon has that Rogue Shift tag, which suggests procedural generation. That eats RAM. And Chromagun 2 is a first-person puzzler. They aren't the most graphically intense games, but they're mechanically dense.
So they're the creativity over graphics poster children.
Exactly. Nintendo is using these to signal to the market, if you have a weird, complex idea, bring it here. We have the RAM for it now.
Speaking of bringing things here, let's talk nostalgia. Dragon Quest Thesic reimagined.
A massive title, especially for the Japanese market.
But the feature that stood out to me was cross-save functionality with Switch 1.
That's such a smart, consumer-friendly move. It acknowledges that not everyone is going to upgrade on day one.
So you can start your 100-hour RPG on your old Switch.
And when you finally get a Switch 2 in June, your save file's just waiting for you. No friction.
And then there's Yakuza Kiwami 3 Remake, which just proves the third-party relationships are still strong.
It's a signal that the mature audience isn't being left behind.
But the biggest applause line in the notes for me was about backwards compatibility. They're calling it new breath in Switch 1 games.
This goes right back to the hardware. The Switch 2 isn't just emulating old games, it's boosting them.
So a game like Hyrule Warriors might actually run at a steady frame rate.
That's the implication. The system uses that extra power and RAM to iron out all those dynamic resolution drops. Games that aimed for 1080p but usually hit 720p should now lock to their maximum targets.
It's essentially a free remaster for your whole library.
And free is the key word. It adds huge value right out of the box.
Okay, we have to talk about the subscription service.
Yeah.
Nintendo Online, it's been a slow drip for years, but the roadmap for 2026 drops the big one.
The GameCube library entry.
Finally, the purple lunchbox, the handle.
It's significant. GameCube emulation is much harder than N64. The architecture was weirdly complex. Doing this correctly requires real power.
So why now? Is it just fan service?
It's about retention. They hook you with the golden list, the new flashy stuff, but they keep you subscribed with Metroid Prime, Wind Waker, and Smash Bros. Melee.
Oh, wow. Melee Online with a dedicated chat key. That is going to be chaos.
It's going to be extremely popular chaos. It turns the back catalog into a heritage asset. It's not just old games. It's the history of the medium on tap.
So let's step back and look at the whole picture. We have the Renaissance branding. We have a console that's a massive leap forward, a 14-game launch. The strategic conclusion in the documents asks, will Switch 2 be the ultimate winner of 2026? What's your read?
I think it's the ultimate wager. If you look at the industry, development costs for those hyper-realistic games are just ballooning to unsustainable levels.
Right.
Nintendo is completely sidestepping that cliff.
By focusing on the fun factor.
By focusing on the efficiency of fun. If Mario Tennis Fever feels amazing to play and Resident Evil runs smoothly, nobody is going to stop to count the polygons. The Golden List is designed to prove that art direction and gameplay matter more than raw resolution.
But there is a risk, isn't there? If third-party devs decide porting their huge Far Hero games is just too much work.
That's the risk, the portability gap. But with DLSS-style upscaling and 12 GBs of RAM, that gap is much, much narrower than it was in 2017. They've built a pretty strong bridge for most developers to cross.
So to you listening, you've heard the specs. You know about the HDMI 2.1 cable. Seriously, use the new cable. You know about the magnetic controllers. But I want to know which of those 14 games is the system seller for you.
I'm personally watching Chroma Gun 2. I really want to see if that chat integration actually works in a puzzle game.
See, I'm just ready to lose my life to Dragon Quest all over again, but this time in 4K.
A very good way to go.
We're going
to
be tracking this launch closely. The hardware's out there. The philosophy is creativity first. And the renaissance is officially underway.
It's going to be a fascinating year.
And I want to leave you with this thought. In a tech world that is just obsessed with raw numbers, teraflops, benchmark scores, Nintendo is betting the farm on pure creativity. In 2026, can a philosophy of fun first actually dominate? Or has the hardware gap finally gotten too wide to ignore? Is good enough specs plus great ideas enough to be perfect specs?
We are about to find out.
Thanks for diving in with us. We'll catch you in the next one.